When the whole family comes together to watch the game, nobody wants to miss a second of the action to run to the grocery store. With Instacart, you can get all your weekly groceries in as fast as an hour. Less time shopping means more game time. Let's go. Visit instacart.com to get free delivery on your first three orders. Offer valid for a limited time. $10 minimum per order. Additional terms apply.
Imagine you're looking at a balancing scale. With everything you do for other people on one side, and everything you do for yourself on the other side. If it isn't balanced, maybe it's time to spend a little more time on you. And therapy is a great place to start. BetterHelp connects you with a licensed therapist online who can help you find that balance and stick to it. Visit betterhelp.com/positive to get 10% off your first month. That's betterhelp.com/positive.
To our Wednesday, sayonara hump day. We are on to Thursday in most of the country, not all of it, but a few minutes past midnight in the Pacific time zone, which includes Las Vegas as well as Edmonton, Calgary, Alberta. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio, on Twitter, A-Law Radio, also on our Facebook page, After Hours with Amy Lawrence. We've got a poll up. Just comes from the nether reaches of my brain. It's fun to think about how many wins the Jets and Packers have now that the Hall of Fame quarterback Aaron Rodgers has taken his act to the Big Apple, and they're giddy in the Big Apple. The Packers, a lot quieter, but they are putting their stock in Jordan Love. It's not just Jordan, though. They're going to have to replace a bunch of different positions considering the number of former Packers that are now following Aaron Rodgers to New York. So which team finishes 23 with a better record? Is it the Jets or the Packers? So you can find the question on both Twitter as well as our Facebook page. Our phone number, 855-212-4227. That's 855-212-4CBS. Still to come on this edition of the show, we've got QB news. We'll get back to more of the playoffs, the latest from the Western Conference with the Warriors and the Lakers. Game two looming on Thursday. We also are wondering about the status of Chris Paul and whether or not he will return as a member of this Suns team that needs to dig out of an 0-2 hole. So a lot still to come here on the show as we work our way toward a Thursday and May the 4th. Huh. That's all I'm going to say. It's a big test for those of you who are paying attention. Fireworks in Vegas. Oh, no, not that kind. A different kind on the ice.
Fighting into position, Kolasar to the net, a shot off the rush, a save, Skinner, the rebound cleared by Ekholm, up the left-hand side, McDavid with Hyman in front, Taylor Dreisaitl shoots and scores, he has four, and Edmonton back within 5-4.
I was listening to Jack Michaels and the Oilers Radio Network, and it's the second night in a row a team beats an opponent that has a player score four goals. Joe Pavelski of the Dallas Stars, they lost to the Seattle Kraken in overtime on Tuesday night. On this Wednesday evening, the Oilers waste four goals from Leon Draisaitl. You hear Jack Michaels on the Oilers Radio Network. He joins us now from Las Vegas, and we'll talk about kind of the back and forth in this game. But I heard you say on the broadcast, Jack, this kind of blew me away, that the Oilers had not lost a game in regulation in nearly 2 months. So against the Vegas Golden Knights, what was the difference, at least initially, in this series?
Well, the curiosity about Vegas is, you know, they've been their nemesis in the sense they've beaten everyone other than Edmonton. I mean, coming into tonight, Amy, the Oilers had actually won their last four trips to T-Mobile Arena over the last 2 years. They'd been 6-1-1 against them. But the reason you heard that regulation talk is somehow Vegas held on to win the division title despite the fact Edmonton went 14-0-1 in its last 15 games. And that's the thing about Vegas, is the Golden Knights have made a living out of winning close games all year long. And they hung on to win the division simply because they wouldn't let anyone else other than Edmonton beat them. And, you know, they went 16-3-3 down the stretch in their own right. They beat Winnipeg in five games in the first round. And they, you know, dealt Edmonton their first loss in regulation, as you talked about, since March the 10th. They're a good hockey team, too. This is also, I think, the most long-awaited series in the Western Conference over the last 5 years. We've seen Colorado-Edmonton. We've seen Colorado-Vegas. We haven't seen these two teams get after one another. And tonight lived up to the billing. I mean, Leon Draisaitl scores 4 goals. I mean, Amy, you're looking for the definition of Stanley Cup playoff chaos. We've had 2 4-goal games on back-to-back nights. And both nights, the team for whom the guy who scored 4 lost. I mean, that should tell you why they say it's the hardest championship trophy to win in sports.
What makes Vegas so good in those situations where the games are tight and there's so little margin for error?
Tonight, I think it was Vegas's depth. I mean, they've got players, you know, in their third and fourth lines, and they're willing, Amy, to play their fourth line against Edmonton's top players. And if they can get away with that for a shift or two, that creates mismatches on other lines. And today, quite frankly, tonight, with Leon Draisaitl scoring 4 and no one else scoring for Edmonton, guys like Chandler Stephenson and Mark Stone, who are accomplished 20-goal, 60-point players, you know, had the advantage. And Vegas was able to exploit Edmonton off the rush a little bit. The Oilers were leaky defensively. It's the same for both teams in terms of the layoff. In fact, Vegas had been off for 6 days as compared to 4 for Edmonton. But I thought some of the Oilers' attention to detail defensively sorely lacking tonight. And that could be attributable to the fact they basically had 1 full practice in the days leading up to this. As you know, most teams will tell you rest is more important this time of year.
Right.
I still think that's true, but I also think it comes at a price. And attention to detail defensively was that price that Edmonton paid tonight.
Connor McDavid did not score in this one, though. He and Leon have had maybe the greatest season for 2 teammates ever in NHL history. How much fun was it to watch these guys continue to get better and to see them spark the Oilers to such a great regular season, especially the finale?
Well, Amy, you and I grew up in the 80s and 90s when players and teams routinely scored 5-6 goals a night. Players were often in the neighborhood of 140, 150 points. And those players were named Merrill Lemieux and Jaromir Jagr and Wayne Gretzky. And that's what the league is heading toward right now, at least at the upper crust with McDavid and Draisaitl. I mean, we haven't seen these numbers. They're video game numbers. They're numbers we haven't seen in the league in 30 years. It was a magnificent regular season turned in by, you know, 2 generational players. And I mentioned, too, because you look at the all-time scores in the history of the playoffs, it reads Wayne Gretzky and then Leon Draisaitl. And Connor McDavid is sitting there right after Merrill Lemieux in fourth place in terms of points per game. We are talking about 2 of the world's best players. McDavid is unquestionably the best player in the world right now. I think Draisaitl ranks 2nd. And I quite frankly think they're 2 of the best players to come into the game in 2.5 to 3 decades. I honestly believe they are Sidney Crosby and Alex Ovechkin magnified, a more developed, a more progressive version of those 2 players. And I know that's a big statement, but I'm telling you, I think we're heading into an era that approaches the kind of era that you and I grew up on in terms of hockey, the scores, the point totals, and that sort of thing.
Jack Michaels is with us from Las Vegas. You can hear the ambiance behind him there. He's the voice of the Edmonton Oilers and joins us following game 1 of the series between the 2 best teams in the West, the Golden Knights and the Oilers. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio. I heard you say this on the air and it kind of blew me away. First time since March 20th that Edmonton has even trailed entering the 3rd period. Oh my goodness, a run of dominance, Jack.
It really was. And you know, coming into the Stanley Cup playoffs, I would have told you that, you know, the 2 best teams in the league were Boston and Edmonton. And as great a year as Boston had, Edmonton actually had a better record in the second half of the season than the Boston Bruins. And the Boston Bruins had the best record in the regular season in the history of the league, 104 years. So it's quite a statement. And yet, having said that, I mean, think about it. Edmonton was the best team, including Boston, in the second half of the year. Not for 20 games, but for 40 games. And they still couldn't catch Vegas. Anyone can be beaten in any kind of best of seven, you know, playoff series. That's what makes Stanley Cup playoff hockey, in my opinion, the most compelling postseason tournament in all of sports. But I'll tell you right now that Edmonton and Vegas have earned that mantle. Very deep teams with explosive high-end players, but also with players that can give you 11 or 12 minutes that play at a much higher level than everyone else's third and fourth line. And, you know, it's a captivating type of series because Edmonton is explosive offensively. Vegas is known as a defensive team, though you wouldn't know it by tonight's 6-4 final. You've got fans that travel exceptionally well, and why wouldn't you, Amy, if you live in Edmonton? You'd love to get a taste of Vegas. And the Golden Knights have been extremely well-received in this market. As you know, there was a question of, you know, could pro sports thrive in Vegas where no one seems to be from, but rather they've moved to? Well, Las Vegans have now been here 25, 30 years. That transition, there's a lot more people that have grown up in Vegas than maybe when you and I were kids. I mean, the only one I could think of off the top of my head was Andre Agassi. You've got people that call Vegas home, and that with that comes pride and ownership. And because it's not the Raiders who moved from Oakland, but it's Vegas, an expansion team, it's Vegas's very own. And so you've got two rabid fan bases, and that makes for an electric atmosphere. I'm sure listening to the game, you could hear much as you could hear the ambience behind me. That crowd is loud.
Yes.
It's loud in Edmonton, but it's also very loud in Vegas.
Mm. How surprised were you that right after Leon Draisaitl gets the tying goal to begin the third period, that boom, Vegas scores twice in quick succession?
That was the key to the game, Amy. I mean, honestly, the Oilers flirted with prosperity a couple times. They took a 1-0 lead. 40 seconds later, the game was tied. They finally worked their way back into a 3-3 tie early in the third period. And 50 seconds later, they're down two. I mean, that has, when you're chasing the game and a team gets two on you and all of a sudden, having tied the game, that feeling of elation lasts a minute and you're down two again, it exacts a physical toll, an emotional toll. You're constantly battling back. It was an uphill struggle. And Edmonton just could never get over the top tonight. And again, full marks to Vegas. They were excellent in transition. They are not known as a rush team. Edmonton, obviously, is known as a team that can really beat you off the rush with their electric group of forwards. And tonight it was Vegas who won that battle. So, again, full marks to the Golden Knights. And the Oilers have some work to do defensively to clean up those areas that, as we talked about, I think that attention to detail, the layoff, again, it was the same for both teams, but Vegas was slightly better in terms of, you know, they did against Winnipeg against Edmonton. The Oilers saw a drop, especially in their defensive game.
Jack Michaels of Oilers Radio with us from Vegas. It's After Hours here on CBS Sports Radio. Given this battle, what's your reaction to the Bruins losing in the first round to an 8 seed in the Panthers?
I, to be honest with you, think the Seattle upset of Colorado, the defending Stanley Cup champions, mm-hmm. is at least on par with the Florida upset of Boston. And here's why. Florida won the President's Trophy as recently as a year ago. And then they went through some real upheaval. They traded one of their top forwards, Jonathan Huberto, and one of their top defensemen, Mackenzie Weegar, to Calgary and brought in Matthew Tkachuk. Now, he's an outstanding player, and he had a tremendous season. But the natural chemistry of the locker room, the rhythm of the players on the ice, it took a while for Florida to figure it out. It really did. I mean, there was an adjustment period there. And I'm not just talking with those players in particular. You've got a different group. Huberto had been there for a decade. I mean, you know, you take a guy like that out of your room. The locker room is a close-knit thing, as you know, in the NHL. So it took a while for Florida to sort itself out, and then they got going in the last 20 games of the year with their season on the line. So they had essentially been playing playoff hockey for about 4 weeks. Boston, ultimately, they were just playing for history against themselves. I mean, you know, to see whether they could have the best regular season record. Here's the thing. Think about it. Golden State, 73 wins. Patriots, 18-0. Seattle, 116 victories for the Mariners. I think that was 2001. None of those teams won. The regular season, when you achieve big things in the regular season, often there's that takes a toll on you. And so I didn't think it was as big of an upset, number one, because of how good Florida was as recently as a year ago. And number two, history tells you when you have that kind of regular season, you pay a certain price.
It is a strange dichotomy. It's one of those things that's very hard to explain, but it could be something about the sense of urgency and being in playoff mode long before you actually get to the postseason.
And again, it was important. The most recent one that I could think of was Golden State. And they won four others. So it's not like they weren't capable of it. But when they pushed, you'll remember this, they pushed to get that 73rd win. It was important.
Yes.
And it might have been too important to them in retrospect.
So, Jack, we saw Joe Pavelski with the Stars, the four goals, but they lose to Seattle. What do you think about the Kraken and the Stars and how they match up?
I got to be honest with you, Amy. Like I said, I thought Seattle's upset of Colorado was as, if not more, stunning than Florida's of Boston. Because if you look at the Kraken, yes, they had balanced scoring, but they really didn't have a goalie that you felt could win a series against a high-powered attack like Colorado. And yet their former goaltender, Philip Grubauer, came back to haunt them. And the same thing in this series, you'd think with Jake Oettinger, who was tremendous for Dallas in a first-round playoff loss to Calgary last year, basically carried the Stars on his back to Game 7 in overtime before they lost that to the Flames. I mean, he's the guy with the pedigree. And yet, you know, Seattle got five on him. And Seattle, you know, blew a lead, as you know, 4-2 in the third period and somehow survived. So as much as I want to say, you know, Dallas should take care of Seattle rather handily, the Kraken are proving me wrong. So I hate to bail on that question, but quite honestly, I don't know what to think because I've basically been wrong at every turn. I will say this. If the playoffs have taught us anything this year, it's not as simple as saying winner of Edmonton-Vegas will represent the West. I just don't feel comfortable saying that because we've just seen too many wacky things already.
We definitely have. That is the beauty of the Stanley Cup playoffs because of the Cup. Vegas takes the early edge. Game 2 is coming up on Saturday, also in Vegas. And always great to catch up with our friend Jack Michaels. You can find him on Twitter at Edmonton Jack, play-by-play voice of the Oilers, TV, radio. He's everywhere. And now he's on After Hours again. We've missed you. Thank you so much for a couple of minutes.
Well, Amy, just so your listeners know, it's only Amy Lawrence who could get me to do a late night show in Vegas. Only Amy. I told your producer that. So I don't know whether that means anything to your listeners, but it's a compliment to you.
It means something to me. Thank you, Jack. That's a great compliment. We do appreciate always the insight, but the humor too. I love to listen to Jack when I have the opportunity on Oilers Radio. And what a season. As a play-by-play announcer, you love it when there are a lot of eyeballs, where there's a lot to keep your attention, to attract your attention. Of course, you love when the team is a winner, but man, when you get to call games for two players, a tandem like Connor McDavid and Leon Draisaitl, it's special too. That may not happen to every play-by-play announcer. It may only happen once in your career. So the Oilers, we'll see if they can capitalize, but the Golden Knights somehow managed to win that division and have home ice. On Twitter, After Hours CBS, on our Facebook page too, is it the Jets or the Packers that finish next season with the better record? Such a dumb question, yet so much fun. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio.
You are listening to the After Hours podcast.
This is Flea for This Little Light, a podcast about falling in love with music. I started a nonprofit music school about 20 years ago called the Silver Lake Conservatory of Music. The reason that I started doing this podcast was music education. I'll be speaking with Rick Rubin, Thundercat, Stuart Copeland, Margot Price, Corey Henry, Cynthia Erivo, Sheila E., and Patti Smith.
Please listen and follow This Little Light, a presentation of Cadence 13 on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Surgeons keep our hearts beating. They do the amazing, help save lives, and so can you. Your CSL plasma donation can help create 24 critical life-saving medicines that can give grandpa the chance for his heart to swell when he meets his new grandson, or give a bride the chance for her heart to skip a beat on her wedding day. Every plasma donation helps more than you know. Do the amazing. Help save lives. Donate today at your local CSL plasma center and be rewarded for your generosity.
Into the Devil's zone. Jarvis to Nason to Aho, trying to find Jarvis. Now comes back to Shea. Scores! Brady Shea's first of the postseason. And that could be a dagger with 9:43 left in the third. Martinuk trying to force a turnover from Holland. He does. Now Carolina. Martinuk out front. Faust. Bingo! Carolina. The exclamation point. It's 5-1. 3:16 left in the third. Jesper Foss, third of the postseason.
This is After Hours with Amy Lawrence.
Pair of hockey games on Wednesday evening, and for the Devils coming off the seven-game series, the victory over the New York Rangers. On the road at Carolina, it was a little bit like the shades of their opener against the Rangers, actually, where they looked somewhat overwhelmed by Carolina. Now, it may be the fact that the Devils had to play a seven-game series, and so could have been some tired legs and maybe that emotional toll that a long series against a rival takes on you. But for the Hurricanes, this is how they started their opener, their first playoff series as well. And this is what they want to do going forward. They want to hit you early. They want to hit you often. And they were able to score in every period. And they end up with a 5-1 victory over the Devils. The call there on Hurricanes Radio. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio. Remember, we talked a bunch about Akira Schmid, the rookie goaltender, 22 years old for the New Jersey Devils. He took over in Game 3. Of their first playoff series. But in this one, of course, it's a different story. Well, and the Rangers had won, was it Game 6 against the Devils? So he had absorbed a loss in his time taking over as the starting goalie. But when you get deeper in the playoffs, the deeper that you get, you're talking about skill and depth and certainly speed. And in some cases, it's a total package. So, yeah, the Hurricanes were able to get by the Islanders. They had been off since Friday night. So Friday night to Wednesday night were able to recover a little more, whereas the Devils, who were in the playoffs for the first time since 18 and have their first playoff series win in over a decade, they're under 48 hours in the turnaround from the Rangers, which was a game that was in Jersey, to having to be in Carolina, in Raleigh, to take on the Hurricanes, who had just a little extra time. That's part of the reason, but I wonder about the Devils, because again, they put themselves behind the eight ball with the way they started against the Rangers too. Of course, it's a long series, and even the rookie goaltender knows that you have to bounce back and you got to flush what happened in this one.
Obviously, slow start. We expected more from ourselves, but no, that's just how it goes sometimes. And I think it was the right move. Give the team something different. We gained a lot of confidence from last series, but it's a new series. What happened in the first doesn't matter anymore. It's just going back to work again.
You have to look at this game as another lesson from series to series. I can only imagine, the emotion and the amount of people telling you what an unbelievable game the previous one was. We all felt the same way. I dealt with it. Players are going to deal with it. You start thinking, this is pretty good. And then you get an eye-opener tonight.
Yeah, and I'm not sure if you guys were watching this game, but the disparity, it was evident even in the very first period. The Devils managed one shot in the first period, just one. Meanwhile, the Canes were putting pucks on net.
and had, oh gosh, I think at one point it was 11-1 advantage in the first period, if I remember correctly. I didn't write it down, but I was watching, and it was an 11-1 advantage. And the Hurricanes scored a couple goals toward the end. Not end-to-end, but they were able to tack on a couple goals in the second half of that opening period. So the Devils were on their heels instantly. Now, nobody on the Hurricanes roster believes that this is going to be a walkover. You would expect the Devils to rally. But the way that Carolina jumped on them early, obviously exactly what they wanted.
They came off of really emotional Game 7. You know, I don't think they had the start they were looking for. We know that, you know, games coming up here, they're going to be really flying. So, but yeah, our start was just how we wanted it.
It's Brady Shea expecting that there will be a punchback from the New Jersey Devils. It's After Hours here on CBS Sports Radio. I don't feel like it has yet calmed down enough to take a breath, if that makes sense. April is so crazy, where you typically can have 6-7 playoff games per night between hoops and hockey, and it's a bit of a blur. I like when we get to the second round and then on into the conference finals in both the NBA and the NHL, where every night you have a chance to absorb one game or two games. So we're close to that point. We're not quite there yet. But on back-to-back nights in the NBA, we'll have just one game. And this is absolutely how the league wants it. One nationally televised game that can grab the headlines if it features the superstars like the Sixers and the Celtics, Jason Tatum, Jaylen Brown, a group of guys that were in the NBA Finals a year ago, the new MVP in Joel Embiid. Okay, James Harden, fine. But the Sixers and the Celtics are a fantastic matchup. And then coming up Thursday, you've got game two of the Lakers and the Warriors, and that's enough said. Those are standalone games on both Wednesday and Thursday. Weirdly enough, the Nuggets and the Suns do not get back into action until Friday night. They last played on what, Monday? They played Monday, if I remember, because I was in my hotel in Syracuse. They go from Monday to Friday. Why? It does not take that long to travel from Denver to Phoenix. It's just weird. The whole thing is weird. Meanwhile, you get the opener and game two between the Lakers and Warriors before the Suns and Nuggets get back on the court. It's just, maybe what they're trying to do is line up the series in the East and the West so that they, if they go the distance, roughly finish about the same time. Not the same day, of course, but meaning you negate the advantage that one team might have over another. If one team finishes the way the Lakers did, right? Going back to last Friday, then the Lakers were off from Friday until Tuesday. Meanwhile, you had the Warriors on a much quicker turnaround, Sunday to Tuesday. Maybe that's what they're attempting to do, but there are major disparities in this second round in how they're fleshing out the schedule. That's typical of the NBA. I know I complain about it every single year. All right, on Twitter, A-Law Radio, on our Facebook page too. Thanks for all of your support, your encouragement, your kind words about my upcoming half marathon. Weirdly enough, I am not extremely sore after running 11 miles on Tuesday. I don't really know why. I'm not why. And I'm not sure why. I would love to believe it's because I'm in shape, but the Grand Canyon kicked my butt, so I don't know. But thank you for all of your tweets. We've got just a fun one-off NFL question. It just kind of popped into my brain. Which team finishes the 2023 season with a better record, the Jets or the Packers? Also, I just saw some dude on Facebook went on a very long diatribe. It was a soliloquy, if you will, if he had been speaking about how there's so much else going on in sports. How dare I talk about the NFL? Give it a rest, he said. I'm going to assume, you know what happens when you assume, I'm going to be fairly safe in my assumption that he's not listening to the show. He's just responding on Facebook because, you know, that's real life right there. It's a funny thing about social media. It's neither social nor actual media, but it pretends to be both. So on either of our sites, you can take the poll, or you can give us a call, 855-212-4227. We know the Jets are seeking more Aaron Rodgers connections, so they have now signed another former Packers wide receiver. I mean, this is the worst-kept secret in pro football. The rest of the Jets, meanwhile, are raving. So we'll do QB news coming up next hour. Kirk Cousins about his future with the Vikings. And while we're talking about the NFC North, it is wide open. Would you say that the Lions are the team to beat? The Vikings, the Lions, Bears? I don't know. That's the interesting piece of this is I actually don't know which is the team to beat. In the
He's
NFC
on
North.
Some beach, so maybe Kirk could win.
And also Bryce Harper returns. The Dodgers.
Surgeons keep our hearts beating. They do the amazing, help save lives, and so can you. Your CSL plasma donation can help create 24 critical life-saving medicines that can give grandpa the chance for his heart to swell when he meets his new grandson, or give a bride the chance for her heart to skip a beat on her wedding day. Every plasma donation helps more than you know. Do the amazing. Help save lives. Donate today at your local CSL Plasma Center and be rewarded for your generosity.
Don't give a crap. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence.
You are listening to the After Hours podcast.
Boston Ball. Again, Brown with it on the left wing. Give and go. He goes into the lane. And B blocked his dunk. What a play by Joel. Give and go by Brown, but he couldn't get it. And B with the ball against Horford. Iso on the left side. Joel holding the ball, making a move left to right. Down the lane. He hammers it in. He's back. A two-hand slam by B. Beautiful drive and a ferocious slam as he blows by Horford.
This is After Hours with Amy Lawrence.
Tom McGinnis on Sixers Radio. The MVP is back. And in fact, Joel Embiid gets to play his first game as the NBA MVP for the first time in his life. And of course, we heard his reaction on TNT on Tuesday, but on Wednesday before the Sixers and Celtics tipped off in the second game of their semifinal series, Joel actually had a chance to address the media and answer questions. And I love it. I love the emotion that we see from athletes when these dreams come true, and his certainly an unlikely journey. And now after years of campaigning, he kind of gives up on that. He has career numbers in many ways. The Sixers are considered one of the best in the league, though it won't matter if they exit in the second round again. However, he's finally at the top of this individual mountain as MVP.
It's amazing. Feels good, obviously. That's something that I dreamed of and, you know, I've always wanted, you know, especially when I started, you know, playing basketball. That was always the goal. And, you know, obviously there's other goals and stuff, but, you know, this is just one step to, you know, to whatever I want to accomplish, which is, you know, to win championships. And, you know, we ride there, so he felt pretty good.
I can imagine. If you saw the video, it was posted on our show Twitter after our CBS. You saw that he was overcome by emotion and actually couldn't even talk after they saw the big reveal on TNT. They're all in their locker room. The guys are filming him, right? So he's got James Harden draped all over him. They realize how emotional he is. And so he's kind of in his seat, and the rest of the Sixers come over to hug him and to take video of him. It was really cool. I love the family picking up one of their guys and how proud they are of Joel Embiid, and what an accomplishment really it is for the entire team, not just Joel. But those kind of moments where you get inside the locker room and you get to see how much those relationships matter and how much they root for one another, Is it all smooth sailing all the time? No, no family is. But what an accomplishment for Joel. Again, after his unconventional journey to get to this point in 2023, but it's been anything but smooth sailing. And that kind of goes along with the aspect of the team, right? Because they've had some really tough years. He's gone through injuries, but then throw into that equation his departure from Cameroon. He didn't start playing basketball till he was a teenager. Yeah, there's so much more to Joel than just the basketball.
My life is a movie. you look at the way, obviously, starting playing basketball at 15 and, you know, not really knowing. I mean, the whole goal was to just, you know, when I got the chance to come to the U.S. was really to come get a degree and find a way to get a job because I didn't think basketball would take me anywhere. With everything that's been happening, obviously losing my brother was a big, you know, was a big part of it. To, you know, almost leading me to, you know, quitting basketball, not, you know, wanting to, you know, come back because I felt like it was kind of my fault because I left Cameroon, I left, you know, my family, and you know, I felt like I should have been there to do something . You know, and that was also at a period where, you know, it was a lot of dark times, missing two years because obviously the foot and everything going on really around the organization, you know, outside of basketball. It was tough, but, you know, I'm just glad that, you know, I pushed through it and I'm here sitting in front of you guys.
Mm-mm. A road full of pitfalls. A road full of, at times, pain and disappointment and grief. But a road of determination and character forged through the fire. And in some cases, failure. Remember when he first got drafted into the NBA? Didn't he immediately send a tweet to Rihanna? If I remember correctly, he was all out there on his social media. Yeah, he was young. He was living it up. He's a different man now. And I really enjoy hearing him, watching him play, of course. He hasn't lost that spiciness. It's a willingness to engage with other players who may have a little something to say. He doesn't shy away from extracurricular activity. I still have no idea how he didn't get suspended. Or at least get a flagrant two and get tossed out of the game in which he delivered, I wouldn't say it was a direct shot, but a glancing blow to Nick Claxton's, you know, the parts of him that should never receive a glancing blow. Of course, I guess if you're looking for some type of karma, I don't really believe in karma, but if you're looking for some type of justice, if you will, than him missing time because of his knee might be. So kind of an up and down ride for him in these hours leading up to game number two, because he was named the MVP and then had to wait to see how he would get through Wednesday. Nearly 2 weeks away because of a sprained ligament in his knee, but had to go through workouts on Wednesday to see whether or not he would get cleared and how he felt. Emotional roller coaster, if you will. And still having to shake the rust off. Played 27 minutes for the Sixers on Wednesday, 15 points and 5 block shots. So he was impacting shots as I'm watching. I know the Sixers defense was not a whole lot to write home about collectively, but he was definitely altering shots and altering the way that guys were attacking the basket or what type of shots they were taking. It's After Hours here on CBS Sports Radio. Let's talk to Lee, who's in San Diego. Lee, welcome to the show.
Hey, Amy, how you doing?
I'm good, thank you.
Hey, let me know if I get this right. First of all, I'm an animal lover, and the other night you were talking about your cat.
Sugar.
It just busted me up. And let me know if I get this right. Meow, 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 meow. meow?
Nah, not quite like that. It was more, in fact, she was doing it just a few hours before I left the house on Wednesday evening. It's more like a
okay, it's a longer meow.
Yeah, there's no really meow quality to it. It's a and it's got all these weird inflections to it. It's very different. It's as though the cat is singing, not trying to get my attention. And I honestly think that she only, well, she, I never see her doing it. She only does it when she can't figure out where I am. So the cat might be going senile. She is 15.
Yeah, I understand that, man. I've had animals my whole life, and I love them more than a lot of people. But you're cool. And can I talk about San Diego sports real quick?
Mm-hmm.
Yes. I still support the Chargers and Clippers. I know they went to LA, but I'm SoCal through and through. And once my Clippers went down, I immediately went to the Lakers, and I think they're playing really well, and they have a chance to win this thing.
Which thing? The series against the Warriors or the whole thing?
The whole thing, man.
Oh, okay.
I think they're just on a roll right now. I support the Kings since the Gretzky days.
Oh, the LA Kings.
We don't have an NHL team, and my Chargers and Clippers went to LA, so I'm SoCal. What do you think about that, Amy?
Okay, I had zero clue that the Clippers were in San Diego. When were the Clippers in San Diego? Is that what you're saying?
Mid-70s.
Oh, well, that would explain why I didn't know. Okay, that's interesting. So was that as traumatic as the Chargers leaving for L.A.?
No.
Oh, okay.
It was way worse for the Chargers.
I'm going to have to Google this. I didn't know.
But I'm still a Chargers fan. I always will be. I'm SoCal through and through. So, and thanks for taking my call, Amy. You're cool. I love you.
Thank you, Lee. Good to talk to you in San Diego. I appreciate the history lesson. Yeah, I just Googled it. It actually, well, it was the 80s, which also would explain why. I mean, I was on the planet in the 80s, but I was a kiddo. Wasn't paying any attention to professional sports. I'm not even sure I was playing my own sports then. Well, I was probably playing my own sport. Let's see. Owner Donald Sterling relocated the franchise to L.A. without NBA approval, which was permitted following legal action between the league and Sterling. 6 years in San Diego. So that's it. They were only in San Diego for 6 years. 1978 to 1984. And they were, in fact, called the San Diego Clippers. Interesting. I had no clue about that. Something I'm just finding out now. I feel so enlightened. But beyond that, it's May the 4th. It's a big test for Bob today. Something tells me he's going to pass it with flying colors, though. He's been dropping hints. He's not very good at keeping things to himself. He's been dropping hints. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio.
Surgeons keep our hearts beating. They do the amazing, help save lives, and so can you. Your CSL plasma donation can help create 24 critical life-saving medicines that can give Grandpa the chance for his heart to swell when he meets his new grandson, or give a bride the chance for her heart to skip a beat on her wedding day. Every plasma donation helps more than you know. Do the amazing. Help save lives. Donate today at your local CSL Plasma Center and be rewarded for your generosity.